How you doing, wrestling fans? And happy new year to all of you. Welcome to 2024, and welcome to another edition of John Arese's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast, the only wrestling podcast that brings you back 30-plus years with vintage audio featuring some of the biggest names of that time. The show is no exception. Pro Wrestling Spotlight covered all the news stories and breaking developments that happened in real time. Now we get to relive those moments right here on this podcast. Today, we're going to review show number 257 of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, which aired on 1240 AM WGBB in Babylon, New York, on November the 20th, 1994. We're going to welcome Donnie Liable into the studio from that show from years ago, as well as Cowboy Bob Orton, who has really an interesting phone call into the show, and I'm not going to give you any spoilers yet, but something really, really cool, especially if you're a fan of modern day wrestling and somebody who is part of his bloodline. So that's going to be fun. And we also have a special appearance by Brian Last from years ago, Brian from Long Beach, with an extended call from him. We'll get into that and everything else. But I want to say to all of you out there, our Patreon account is still doing what it does. All of you who support this show, is we consider you friends, and thank you so much for all the support over the last few years since we've been doing this. And $5 a month can get you in that door, and you can hear all of these shows, all of the archives of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. I recently put up some other posts that honored the 50th anniversary of Bruno Sammartino winning the WWF title December 10th, 1973, to some really cool photos from that night, and also that new Memories from Madison Square Garden, where we talk about that night, is up and running as well. Patrons get it first. Patrons get everything commercial free. So why don't you sign up? That is patreon.com/John Arese. Let's bring on the newest amateur wrestler in the world of amateur wrestling, Mr. Marsh.
Coming in from
Arizona. I do understand that you are about to enter amateur wrestling, so tell us about that, please.
Yeah, there's no reason not to. For Christmas this year, someone I hadn't talked to in a long time remembered I liked wrestling and sent me a brand new double X singlet. I haven't tried it on yet, but I'm gonna.
I think you should wear it on next week's show when we tape that for our YouTube viewers. I think if it would really mean a lot to everyone kicking in the new year of you just doing the show in the singlet.
I should, and I got Rey Mysterio's mask. I could do the show in a singlet with a mask.
Yeah. And I'll, if I could find my old wrestling outfit from 1978, I would wear that.
Do you still have it?
No. It was in a box I threw out probably when I sold my house.
Yeah.
I know I had it, the boots, the singlet, but I don't anymore. So that's life in the big city. Someone maybe have picked it out of the garbage and might be enjoying it today.
You should have signed it before you tossed it just to see if it popped up anywhere.
Yeah, I did sign it. I put loser on it.
Yeah.
Jobber.
0-2.
Jobber. So how were your holidays?
They're really good. Really good. Very low key. We kind of kept it around. We did a little staycation thing for New Year's, and it was really nice.
Yeah. I had a really quiet one too. Yeah. Went up to New York, was with the family, my nephew, my sister. We had a pretty cool Christmas Eve, went to one of my sister's friend's house. They do this big spread of all this Italian delicacies and antipasto and that lobster tails, and it was fun. And typically the same people do a New Year's Eve party, but this year they decided not to. But my sister got tickets to a stand-up comedian friend of hers in a little a place called the Brokerage Comedy Club on Long Island, and I was the fodder of some insults from that gentleman. Plus, he's a ultra right wing guy, you know. He's a full-blown Donald Trump supporter and everything else. And he made one comment, something about Biden, and everyone started cheering and clapping. And I didn't. I just didn't, you know. And, yeah. and he just looked at me. He goes, the only one who didn't applaud. You're a communist? And he kept coming back to me the whole night. But I was all in good fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you tell him communism gets a bad rap?
It was fun, and he was a cool guy, and we hung out. And then New Year's Eve, we just my sister, my nephew, and I we just watched the New Year's Eve celebration from Nashville. Actually, you know, watched the Times Square stuff, and it was good. It was quiet, and I was glad that there was not a lot going on. Did go to a few movies while I was up in New York, as I typically do. Have you seen The Iron Claw yet?
We saw that New Year's Day.
What'd you think?
I thought it was phenomenal. The way they did it was very artistically done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. It was emotional. The line in the end killed me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was really, really well put together. I understand some people's gripes with some of the performances of some of the characters, but at the same time, like, I think the one thing that people forget about is what made guys like Harley Race special and Ric Flair special is they were one of a kind. Like, it's going to be hard to find someone that looks like them and or sounds like them and even can master their mannerism. You know what I mean? Like, they were like one of ones. So
I think they were pretty spot on a lot of it. I think the character that played Fritz von Erich, I mean, that was phenomenal. I think the whole movie was phenomenal. It was a dramatization. So there were things that were omitted from history, and you have nitpickers out there. It's like, oh, they didn't mention this, or they didn't mention the brother that died, the other brother that had killed himself. And but I think it had the essence of the story of that family, the tragedy of that story, how popular those boys were and how big the Von Erichs were in the wrestling business. And the crowd that we saw it, there were, you know, people were like pretty amazed at this, especially if you're not a wrestling fan. It's like this was true.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. So I really loved it. I enjoyed it. I hope that during award season it gets recognized. I think there should be some recognition, whether it's best picture or not, I don't know. But some of the performances, it's certainly worthy, and it was a good movie. I did see one other movie while I was up there too, and that one was called Poor Things with Emma Stone.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen it, but I've seen the commercials. Oh. It looks neat.
Oh, I, you know, it was probably the most bizarre movie I've ever seen in my entire life. Okay. I mean, it was so good. It was so good. My nephew, who I went with on that, he was like, I don't know. I've never seen anything like this in my life. And it was really good. Special effects, the brilliant scenic, the plot. And I've always been an Emma Stone fan, and this movie just blew me away. It was utterly bizarre, amazing, incredibly graphic in so many different areas. I would highly recommend it.
That's good to hear, because my one thought I've had while watching the trailers is, are they trying to be weird for weird's sake and thinking it's going to come across as clever? Because sometimes just being weird or bizarre or something that no one's ever done is because it's just not a good idea to do it. You know what I mean? But if they made it all work.
They couldn't even put in the trailers any of this true or just some of the bizarre graphic nature of this film and what this whole plot was about. It was incredible. I mean, it really was really, really good. So
when it works, it's great.
I would be remiss if you saw this and didn't come back and say, wow, I would be.
I mean, that's what I was hoping. Like I said, when weird works, it's amazing. And sometimes people go like, hey, let me do like I don't like those videos I see on TikTok where it's like always keep them guessing. And it's like just people doing something and then trying to be as random as possible in a sequence. It's for no end and it's for sake of, right? But if someone figured out a way to do a story that might feel that way, but actually tell you something, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, like, it's kind of like Frankenstein in a way. It's just bizarre. I mean, it really is. But the graphic nature of it was crazy.
Is it bloody?
Yes.
It is. Okay, so I'll have to watch it without my fiance. She does not like bloody.
Yeah.
So it's but
very, very, very sexual as well.
Well, then I'll tell her that might change her mind.
I mean, Emma Stone is like full, you know.
Yeah.
It's very it's graphic in so many different ways, but
wow.
I enjoyed it because I'm a little bit bizarre in my own brain.
Yeah. And sometimes it's cool and refreshing to watch something that is just so remarkably different. You get different feelings, you know?
Yeah, it's cutting edge in a way that I hadn't seen cutting edge in a film in many, many years.
That's awesome. Can I ask you one thing about Iron Claw, just on the wrestling aspect of it?
Because
we had the amazing joy of being able to interview Kevin Von Erich last year. Mm-hmm. And he had mentioned in there that he really wasn't involved in the making of this at all.
He wasn't?
Not a consultant or anything. Without going down the rabbit hole I went down on my own show about how angry I was about that as a fact. But the interesting bit to me is that knowing that, it's interesting that the movie's basically a biopic about him.
It is.
You know, like, it kind of left me a little sour at the end when I was like, how do you not even put him as a, just to make sure he gets a little money on it? You know what I mean? Like, even if you say, let's make you a consultant and not even ask you something.
They have MJF as an executive producer.
That's my point, is he knows better.
And Kevin should have, you know, whatever it was. I mean, from what he said, they did it without him even knowing. He read about it, and then he got involved. And I guess the producers, directors, the actors, they all fell in love with him and the family anyway. So, but I think that was an injustice for not putting him in as a consulting producer or something to put him in the credits and give him a payday from it.
Exactly. That was my biggest gripe of the whole thing, is knowing that he's not getting a cut of this and it's all about him. And then knowing that there was a few like really personal scenes that I was like, how do they know that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, you know, look at it this way. I mean, what an opportunity, you know, Tony Khan gave his sons.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
How long will that continue? If they're smart, they'd make something of that and bring those boys back. And those guys did a pretty good job in the matches that they appeared in, the one match on TV. And I guess they did a Ring of Honor as well. And Kevin, that angle at the end was great. He came out and did the claw. Oh, cool. But I mean, that would be really cool if they would give these guys a shot.
Yeah.
They certainly need it. Like, who knows what's going on with MJF now? I mean, there's all kinds of rumors and speculation. He really, he did the main event against Samoa Joe, was at Nassau Coliseum on Long Island in his hometown, and he lost the title.
Yeah.
He got destroyed at the end. He's taken a lot of time off. And my nephew and I were talking about that before the show, because my nephew was like, we should go to the movie to see it. And I was like, listen, that's going to be a 4 or 5 hour show. I'm not sitting in the theater. I don't want to go there live. And the show had you know, big attendance. So that's when we decided to go see Poor Things. But I said to him that if MJF loses in his hometown in the biggest match of his career in his backyard, if he loses the title, to me, that means that maybe he's done with them.
Mm.
We don't know. It could be a swerve. Yeah. But he's a free agent as of 2024, and only time will tell. But imagine if he shows up at the Royal Rumble.
It could be pretty big. My gut, I don't think he's leaving AEW.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, I really think he should. I think if he's ever going to get the notoriety that he believes he deserves and should be able to prove, he's got to leave.
Yeah. Join Cody and join CM Punk and look what they're doing. They're going to be the same things.
He worked really well with both those guys.
He did. Could be interesting. And, you know, finally, before we get to what happened all those years ago, The Rock, not a big surprise, but The Rock coming back.
Yeah.
When he said that line, you know, where should I eat? Well, I'm here in San Diego. I like to be at the head of the table. Yeah. And that was it. You knew that something's going to happen.
Yep. And the rumors swirling, the debates are happening, the anger. Everyone is so upset and so excited. And how do they make this work? How do you shoehorn that in? Like, it's a fun time to kind of just speculate because it could be anything. And I honestly, as much as there's things I prefer and don't prefer and would like and don't like, I haven't seen any of them that sound awful. You know what I mean? Everyone's speculation. Yeah, that could be cool.
Yeah.
You know,
I like the whole idea of the buildup. I look forward, as I always do, to the Royal Rumble. I think it's going to be a good one this year. And going into WrestleMania, they've been leading. This had to happen. Rock against Roman has to happen.
Yep. They've been doing it too long for it to not, you know what I mean? Yeah. Even in the beginning, when they first brought out like the Wild Samoans, the Offensica at the end of, what was it? The Hell in a Cell.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was like, okay, how do we get the Rock involved? You know what I mean? Like it was day one. We knew.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll see what happens. We have lots of wrestling to watch and we have lots of wrestling to talk about today on this episode.
Yeah, you had. Yeah, let's go back. November 20th, 94, episode 257.
Mm-hmm.
You had Don Leibel in studio.
I did.
How many times do you think he was in studio?
Maybe a handful, less than a handful between the three stations.
Yeah, because I
not often.
I know I haven't heard the entire catalog, but I have heard a good chunk of it. I was listening before I was even on, but I could only think of a couple times he was at events that you were at, so you recorded with him, but none of them were in studio. I couldn't remember. So just kind of a cool. I have the opening here where you bring him on.
Awesome.
Also, ironically, doesn't do a capsule.
No capsule this week, but he's there in person. Isn't that something?
Yeah. He goes one or the other, pal.
Now it's time for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight with your host, John Arezzi.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the program for Sunday, November 20th, 1994. Another big week of pro wrestling news right here on WGBB. And first of all, I want to welcome here in the studio with me a gentleman who I've known for 20 or so years, I would guess. Someone who's done a news capsule with me since 1989 when we began this program on commercial airwaves. Don Leibel. Don, how are you?
Very good, John. Just recovering from a night going into the Gates of Hell, the ECW Arena. Tremendous card. And anybody that's never been to an ECW card, you have never experienced anything. It is an experience. And there's no other way to explain it than to watch it, to be there, to feel it. It's incredible.
Well, last night, of course, another big show in the Philadelphia area at the ECW Arena. And a turn-away crowd last night. Legitimately, they shut the doors. They couldn't fit anybody else into the building. The place was rocking all night long. And it's certainly becoming, and we say this time and time again after each one of these shows, and you don't feel that the show that you're going to can top the last one, but it happened. It happened again. And just the fact that the crowd is just as much a part of the show.
Audience participation is incredible. They
throughout
have,
the night.
Let's see, frying pans. They hand the wrestlers chairs,
cookie,
crutches.
I saw a cookie sheet last night. That was used, crutches. And it was unbelievable. And just the return of Sabu last night after that injury a couple weeks ago was a miracle in itself. But as Paulie Dangerous said here on this program a couple weeks ago, Sabu said he would be there on the 19th. He was there, and Sabu said he was going to give him a show. And I saw some moves last night by Sabu that I'd never seen before, including putting a chair, as you saw, on the very top turnbuckle, getting on top of that chair as it's on the top turnbuckle, and doing a moonsault onto to Ted Petty. It was unbelievable.
Sabu appeared like he said he was going to after that horrific head injury against Chris Benoit. But having Donnie there was kind of cool because Donnie is like a kid. Donnie is, and he called me a little while ago, actually, and he's talking baseball with me, but he's got the same childlike enthusiasm as I've known him all his life. And this show, for him being there and for him to be at the ECW arena experiencing that and then coming into the studio, it's like Christmas for him.
Yeah.
These types of things. Genuine enthusiasm, genuine innocence, and he never lost that, really.
So you guys had planned him to come out like for the whole weekend. He was coming down and he was, and he stayed with you, I imagine.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's stayed awesome. At a place that we were renting at the time. But yeah, Donnie is, that was good to have him there. You know, it was like you mentioned, you didn't hear him in the studio often because he wasn't there.
Yeah. I think that's awesome, dude. Yeah, he seemed excited. He was really going to the ECW show. We do end up having a caller later that talks about Donnie being there. He chimes in here and there. So there's a few clips along the way. I don't know. It's just cool to hear your friendship with him back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
It's been this, it's been consistent, you know, all of these years. Yeah, you know, you're talking 50 years.
Yeah.
49 actually this year, because I met him in 1975. But that's a long friendship to endure.
Did you have like a spare room, or was it, were you staying with your mom? Like,
well, let's see, that was 94, so we were actually renting a house at that time in West Babylon, and it was a couple of bedrooms, and I had a downstairs office set up. So that's where Donnie probably stayed down there.
Okay. Nice. And then was it you and your family?
It was just me and my mom. You know. Really? Okay. Yeah. My sister had gotten married a few years earlier.
Okay.
Actually, she got married in 86. So that was several years earlier. So it was just me and my mom. Yeah.
I mean, it also explains why Don knew your mom.
And the cat.
Well. And the cat, the fat one?
Child. My sister's cat that she couldn't keep. Child.
How often would Donnie come stay with you? I know it was probably anytime he came through the city to watch a show, right?
Convention time, really.
Okay.
Yeah, so anytime he was coming up to New York, which was not often. It was during the Weekend of Champions to help out, and it was rare. It was rare.
Is he the type, because I know he called you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If your mom picked up, would he just chop it up with her for a while before you even get
there? Oh, yeah. 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 My mom loved Donnie, too.
Not surprised. I just thought it was awesome.
And my sister. You know, everybody loved Donnie.
I mean, it's Donnie. You know what I mean? Like, the first time I met him on here, I was like, this guy's incredible.
Yeah.
And his energy. And, like, there's certain people that you can... I mean, I haven't even met them face to face, but there's certain people where you get approached by them or you can feel like almost just this positiveness just emitting from you. Like, oh, that person's heart is made of gold.
Yeah.
Donnie's the type.
And what's so cool about Don, too, is the fact that he's very active. He's, closing in on retirement, and he works in the medical industry, and he's really doing that just to keep busy, to keep his health insurance until, you know, he goes on Medicare. But he keeps himself active by writing. He writes for a number of different publications. But I would suggest, because he's written some and there's a wonderful article he just wrote called True Confessions of a Pro Wrestling Junkie by Don Leibel. And it talks about why he left wrestling, and it has this wonderful picture here of him with Nature Boy Ric Flair, and I'll hold it up for YouTube viewers if you guys could see it. I don't know if you can or not.
Oh, yeah, there it
is. That was like at Flair's debut at Madison Square Garden. So Donnie writes about baseball. He writes about wrestling occasionally. So if you want to check this stuff out, this is at go to WIBX. The URL WIBX950.com, and then he also works for the Bradenton Times, so that's the BradentonTimes.com, where he does amazing writing about baseball. So if you want to check him out, I think he does both of these. He writes for both of them weekly. He does these columns.
That's awesome. The Wrestling Junkie one, we should link that article on the Patreon.
I would say yes. People would be fascinated by it. As a matter of fact, when he called me tonight, he asked me if I read it. And I said, yeah. I said, I was really surprised that you put that stuff out there. Really? I know Donnie always wanted to write a book. And I told him, you should write it. You should write it. You don't need a ghostwriter. You're a writer.
Yeah.
You should do it. And whether also you self-publish it or find a publisher for it, this guy was in the wrestling business for so many years, and he saw so much, and he loved it so much, and then he hated it because of, you know, what happened when he was hanging out with the ECW guys.
The amount of people that we know in different publishing circles, I can't imagine, even if he just wrote it, I can't imagine we couldn't get it pitched somewhere.
You know what I mean? Well, I mean, I've talked to him many years about it, because the title is there, and he just feels he needs a ghostwriter for some reason. I don't know.
That makes no sense.
To put it in any structural order, I don't know. But I think that he should, because he has a lot of tales to tell.
Also, with him, tell the stories. Write it now. And then worry about the other stuff later, right? Maybe there is no structure. Maybe you bring in a ghostwriter after you already have the meat of it. I don't know. This is an argument for him.
To edit it, yeah.
I'm preaching to the choir on this one. I'm all like, tell him he has to. If you do go, anybody who is listening who's not on the Patreon, if you do go to WIBX.com, if you just hit the search button, actually search only the word Don, it's the first thing that pops up is that article. So, but we're going to link it in the Patreon because this is great.
Great article. And it really surprised me that he actually put it out there.
I think it's awesome, man. We need more books. Let's see. Oh, and then, just quick shout out. Earl Hebner's got a book out now. He just released it with a small publishing company called Walking on Hot Waffles is the name of the publishing company. I don't know, but it's a fun read.
Well, he saw a lot too, didn't he?
He's been through a couple things.
He has been.
He even, there's a chapter in there called T-shirts and Bullshit.
Ah.
Nice. I think controversy T-shirts and Bullshit. Yeah, so like he's telling his side.
Yeah.
But it's pretty good. Speaking of cool and telling their side, and like you said earlier, legacy.
Yeah.
Got Bob Orton on the line.
Yes.
It was a nice long interview. I cut, it looks like one part of it in the middle there, where you ask him about going, because he just came back from India. You ask him about the crowds. You talked to him a little bit the last time you saw him. So Herb Abrams comes up for a minute, and Don Leibel comes on to ask him, as Don Leibel always does,
This was the meat of this interview. This, when I listened to it, when I uploaded it, I was like, this is freaking cool. This is so cool. So I think everyone out there listening or watching on YouTube are really going to get a kick out of this.
But there's some controversy on this tour over there. There were a number of guys there. But first of all, what type of venues did you play in, and how were the crowds there?
The crowds, we wrestled, I think, 8 nights. And I believe that all but maybe one of them would have sold out Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
There were one crowd was, 60,000-70,000 people. You just looked out of the ring, and it was just like, you know, you see them things like where Gandhi or the, what's his name over there, John Paul the Pope?
Yeah. It was just like massive amount of people.
Just massive people. You just looked out, and that's all you could see was his head, you know, for it seemed like miles. You know, it was great.
Were they out to
that concerned? And they put us up in the nicest places over there.
Uh-huh.
I really had no complaints. One night, the guards did get out of hand, way out of hand. It seemed like they didn't know what they were there for.
Yeah, that's what we had heard reports. It was out on the AP wire here in the United States, which went out nationwide, that they reported that the Ultimate Warrior.
Well, just the Warrior. He calls himself the Warrior.
That was Chris Walker, right?
I'm pretty sure that's his name. Real nice fella.
Yeah, well, to your best recollection, transpired during what caused that incident?
Well, this is going to be a little ironic, but I was in the back at the time speaking to the promoter about security. I was telling him that I didn't think it was too good and that we needed to get the head guy, let them guys know who they were there to protect. And ironically, that's when all this transpired, and I really don't know what happened. When I went out, it was already over. And, you know, it's a good thing I wasn't standing back there watching her. I'd have been right in the middle of it. And,
yeah.
And they all carry machine guns over there. I'd have been the one they'd have had to pull the gun on, Daddy, because, you know, you them little Indians couldn't stop me.
Very true.
But, no, really, all in all, I had a great time, but I didn't go over there expecting the Garden of Eden. You know, I knew what I was going over there to.
Yeah.
And we're all men. We've been around the world, you know, many, many times. And you got to, you know, walk softly.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Got to use your head.
Yes. Shoot. Especially when you're outside the U.S. of A. And when we heard these reports about, you know, the police getting involved and clubbing the wrestlers and Bill Eden, and then as Don was mentioning, there were some reports that the Warrior was in the hospital, 20, in a coma, whatever. So we just wanted to try to get...
There were 20 of them guys on demolition, and he was just knocking them off, from what I understand, like flies.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah, Bill Eady's a tough guy.
Yeah, big, strong guy. Yeah. And see, but something you got to remember, when you go to these places, they hate Americans. They hate us because of the way we live, our lifestyle, what we have over here. And they just hate us. And you've got to realize that when you go to these places, that they do not like you. Me, I'm used to that. The Americans don't even like me. So it's no problem for me.
Well, you're certainly one of the most well-liked guys in the wrestling business here in the States, and everybody always talks good about you. I was last time I ran into you was out in Las Vegas for the Blackjack Brawl.
Yeah.
Promoted by Herb Abrams.
Yeah, you still haven't paid me that, geek.
Well, there's been a lot of reports about that, but also just the thing that really irritated me during your match was the fact that, you know, he gave Ludwig Borger a chair. Oh, actually, it was... And you got busted open pretty good. It was pretty ugly, yeah.
Six stitches. It was just a scratch. You know, I was back in the casino later that night.
Well, what do you think of a promoter giving one of the wrestlers a chair? You know, that was something I never seen before.
I think the guy's
he's way
brain dead. Don't get me started on promoters.
Well, I hope I've always treated you good.
Yes, you have, John.
But
yes, you have. You were fantastic to work for. It was a pleasure and a nice place to go.
Yeah, we had a lot of
Malaysia's fun there. Beautiful, you know, nothing like India.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I say, you know, they put us up in the great hotels, and as long as you stayed at the hotel around the swimming pool and stuff, it was okay. If you wanted to really open your eyes, you know, just walk outside and walk around a little bit, you know, and just look at the stuff. And I'll tell you, it makes you glad to be back home in the good old U.S. of A.
Uh-huh. Well, Don Leibel's here also, Bob, and he certainly wants to say hello to you and has a couple questions.
Hi, Bob.
You.
Yeah. The times I spent with you up in New England when you worked for Walter Kowalski,
a couple
questions for you. One, how's your son doing? I know you had said in the past that he was doing quite well in amateur wrestling.
He was state champion down here twice. He beat the national champion last year three times, and he lost to him once. And he started... high school this year, and to my surprise and amazement, he made the basketball team. He's not going to wrestle. He's going to play basketball.
Oh,
but by golly, that's what he wants to do, and God bless him for it. He's on the honor roll, and that's the important thing.
How old is your son now?
He's 14, and he's about a half an inch taller than me. I got to look up to the kid now.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. He's really growing. I've had him training since he was nine. So, you know, he's...
Well, you were a very good amateur wrestler yourself.
Ready. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That was great. I mean, that we should put that up as a short.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the same thing. Like, incredible. Like, the fact that he's even, like, been training him since he was nine. I'd like to ask either one of them what that entailed. Like, is he just meaning like he had him running around? Did he actually put him in a ring and teach him how to run the ropes? Like, what did he mean by training him?
Yeah. You know, I had that opportunity in Joplin, Missouri, when I promoted an IWAS show there to do some TV and met Randy. And I guess he was 16 because that was in 96. So he was just 16, and what a respectful kid he was. I wish I still had the videotape. That would be nice. But, yeah, so this is kind of really fascinating. You know, when you hear about a 14-year-old kid and Bob said he's going to be playing basketball, we all know that where he ended up, and that's going to be in the WWE Hall of Fame for sure someday. But, yeah, when I heard that, I was like, I popped, really. I was like, this is so cool to even discuss this.
Yeah, immediately. And again, it's Donnie. You know what I mean? Yes. How's your son? You're like, why?
Right.
He's always asking everyone how their family is. That's why, like, the one time your mom called in, he had to get on the line and say hi to her.
Yeah.
You know, like, just awesome. But yeah, the fact that he's like, he's 14 years old and he's a half inch taller than me. And how cool, like, you could hear him then. I bet you nothing makes him happier the day that someone went up to him for the first time and went, oh, you're Randy Orton's dad. Mm-hmm. And it was no longer, you're your Bob's son. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That had to be really cool for him. Cause I'm sure it's happened at this point.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I respect him and know his career, not on the same level as you do by any means. The first time I saw him at CAC, I went, oh shoot, it's Randy's dad.
Yeah.
Cowboy. You know what I mean? But
yeah. Well, what a performer he was over the years. And he did a wonderful job for us in IWAS as well. And, but yeah, Bob is a great, great guy and just a legend. And this whole thing, I mean, you could hear the whole interview if you're a patron. Just go to patreon.com/John Arezzi and you could hear the entire interview with Bob that we did on the telephone. And it was a good one.
It was. It was a good one. And anyone who wants to meet Bob, he's at CAC every year, Cauliflower Alley.
He is.
He's always there. And they have a tournament for cribbage.
And he wins a lot.
He always wins. But I'll be honest, I'd have to learn how to play cribbage to even try to play it. So it'd be like if I sat down and he was teaching me, which he does with people. I've seen him. He, you know, some of the, I don't know how to play. Well, let me teach you. He still will whoop you. Yeah. But
like, the games that I would play in my age and state of mind today would be Candyland or Operation. Oh.
Those are good ones. We should definitely petition that.
Candyland.
Yeah. Let's set up a PlayStation and have Candyland for people who don't want to play cribbage. So,
Candyland was a board game for 3-year-olds.
I know. I'm fully aware. I'm a master of Candyland.
You will
school you. but yeah, I mean, and then they ask him a. Donnie asked a really astute question too about if he's going to be going down to Dallas because there's all that rumbling stuff down there about something coming up in Dallas. And he talks about coming to Smoky Mountain and all that. So it is a good interview for anybody who's got the Patreon. You're going to enjoy it. But moving along a little bit here, live from the Dennis Coraluzzo NWA tournament.
Yes.
Was Brian Last.
Yes.
And he Brian. Called in.
Yes, he did.
He called in specifically to give you the results.
Yeah, and it was the first time I met Brian in person was at that Coraluzzo deal.
Yeah, because you went earlier for the signings.
Yep.
And then you split for the show.
Yeah, which didn't endear me to Dennis. He wanted us to stay in Jersey, but we did not.
Yeah, you had a long drive ahead of you.
Yeah, but Brian was became very, very close to Dennis. So, but he did say, you know, he didn't say the most complimentary things in this.
Really? In he was close with him?
Very close with Dennis, yeah, because of Cornette.
But I thought also Cornette didn't like Dennis.
Well, they did a lot of stuff together.
Didn't they? Okay, I didn't realize that. Because I don't think I've heard him mention Dennis Coraluzzo in a positive way almost ever.
Oh, yeah? Maybe I'm brain dead.
No. I also could be misinterpreting the way he says things.
Yeah.
Because he might even just be making jokes because he does like the guy or whatever, you know?
I don't know. Can't figure that guy's brain out.
That's true, too. But, yeah, I didn't realize that they had gotten close. But, yeah, he went to the Coraluzzo show. He stayed for the NWA tournament. And he called in very excited to give you the absolute report, like everything about it. He couldn't wait. And so this to me was cool. I shrunk it.
Yeah.
You'll hear little fast forward tape sounds at certain points. So that way the breaks and the things don't sound like completely like canned. If you listen to the original Patreon.
Yeah, if you go to Patreon, you hear the whole thing. So for me, it was fascinating because Brian would normally call in and ask a question or maybe two sometimes, and that would be it. It would be a segment that would last a minute or two with Brian's calls and then the answer. But this was a lengthy one. So this is kind of like, you know, if you follow Brian, and I certainly listen to the podcast still with the Cornettes, the two shows that he does, and I enjoy them every week. This is kind of like his first lengthy foray as reporting on something.
I felt like he wanted to, in his heart, end that segment with, for Pro Wrestling Spotlight, I'm Brian Last. You know what I mean? Like, he felt like he came prepared and ready to report. So it was cool. So this is it. This is the condensed version. It's still a few minutes long with just some kind of like highlights to me.
Back with the program. And I understand we do have someone who was at the tournament yesterday, Brian Last, and he's going to be joining us. And that before we get to the ECW report, let's find out what happened at the NWA tournament last night. Brian, are you there?
How you doing, John?
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
You missed. I know you were at ECW, but it was a hell of a show. One of Dennis Carlos's only good ones, I'd say.
Well, it was an exciting night.
Well, I would say the lowest rated match was maybe 2 stars. Eddie Gilbert was a human highlight. Every match he had was a brawl around the arena, and it got on the mic after his final match and pretty much threatened to murder Caruso. And,
he did?
Yeah, well, it seemed like he didn't know he was supposed to lose or something. There was one match which apparently turned into a shoot, and,
Well, why don't we do this? Do you have the results in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, why don't you go over the results and give us, like, a little synopsis of each one of the matches?
The second match, which was unbelievable, was Chris Candido beat Al Snow, which was just a great match because Al Snow's one of the best independent guys out there today.
Yes, he is.
And that was unbelievable mat work, and the crowd was really playing. And it was surprising that after the match, Chris Candido gave Al Snow a handshake. They hugged, and they went their separate ways. After that match, wait, hold on for a second. I got it written down over here.
Okay. Brian Last, who was, had a chance to say hello to him yesterday, and it was good to see you yesterday at the autograph show, too.
Yeah. Actually, before the Chris Candido match, Eddie Gilbert beat Johnny Gunn. Then came the second round of the tournament. Then the first match, Tracy Smothers beat Eddie Gilbert in what I would say 4.5-star brawl all around the arena. Into the crowd, these fire extinguishers that went outside everywhere. And Tracy Smothers, him and Candido probably the MVPs of the card. They had some of the greatest matches they've ever had.
That was the second round, Smothers beating Gilbert?
Smothers beating Gilbert, yes. And after that match, Gilbert got on the mic and asked for Caruso, and Caruso was nowhere to be found. And then he walked off, and apparently he was supposed to do some kind of photo shoot for Bill Apter and all those other magazines, and he just walked right past, and they were all trying to call him, and he just went to the back. And there was just a lot of various promoters out there. And before the match, they showed everybody the belt and everything. And this match was at least 4.5-5 stars. They worked their asses off, and I've never seen a match like this where there was so much heat from the crowd. Everybody got into it. It was really good.
Who are the participants?
Chris Candido and Tracy Smothers.
Okay.
And Chris Candido won the tournament, and it was really one hell. And Chris Candido's whole family was there and everything, so he probably really enjoyed that to no end. And ended a great night of wrestling. I mean, I've never seen a good show from Dennis Caruso until then.
What was the estimated crowd?
About 400.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how many people paid, because a lot of people just walked right in. I mean, they did that during the convention, too. But, I mean, the one thing that got on a lot of people's nerves, I mentioned to you yesterday, John, was Tommy Fierro and Dennis Caruso's constant cracks over the microphone about ECW. I mean, it got to the point that they had, for $25, you can get in the ring and wrestle. And they would get on the microphone and say, this is for the ECW Bingo Hall title. The winner will get the ECW Bingo title. And they started calling out bingo numbers during the matches, saying bad things about Todd Gordon and various other wrestlers, and just...
Well, when we showed up yesterday, obviously we went to the autograph session first before the ECW show. It was like everyone was questioning us, why weren't we staying for the tournament? And it was just a matter of a choice on my part, and also the people who are going on this trip. I've been following ECW and their growth, and it was a place I wanted to be. I wanted to be in a building that was rocking. I wish both shows weren't on the same night, you know. But the promotional wars that have taken place in that area... they should stop. You know, they should learn to work with each other. But unfortunately, in the wrestling business, that's not going to happen.
Honestly, Caruso's not going to affect Todd Gordon. Todd Gordon's not going to affect Caruso.
No.
And that's what I believe. I mean, just it got really. I mean, from what I understand, Thursday night when they were in Philadelphia, Carl Lewis guys were going after everybody who anything had to do with ECW. They were slashing tires of cars.
Well, that's allegedly, right?
Yeah, that I've heard from many people. And last night, I know for a fact there were some guys handing out ECW flyers for the show at like 6:30, 7 o'clock, and Carl Lewis started chasing them away outside. I mean, just.
It's gotten ugly.
Yeah, but I mean, it really gets. I mean, it seemed that Tommy Fiorillo and Dennis Caruso went out of their way to get on the microphone and just trash ECW. And I know several ECW fans confronted Caruso and threatened, like, hurt him bad. And, you know, just, it really is stupid. His kids were there and they have to see this just for no reason, just trashing ECW.
Well, our opinion here is that everyone should try to get along together. And as far as these ugly incidents that are taking place, you know, I wish that people can get along, but. Hey, that's life in this crazy wrestling business. But listen, I appreciate your time today, Brian, giving us a first-hand report of what happened at the tournament, and we appreciate it very much.
No problem, John.
Okay, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot.
It was an ugly night in New Jersey with all the shenanigans going on.
It was cool, too. He was giving star ratings for every one of the matches and stuff.
Mm-hmm. It was cool. I mean, that's kind of that was definitely a cool segment. It really was, and it was in the middle of this heated wrestling war that Caruso just couldn't accept the fact that right over the bridge, you know, Todd Gordon is rocking it with Paul Heyman doing you know, turn away crowds.
Yeah,
but it was very petty what was going on.
Yeah, and at one point, I don't have the clip of it, but Donnie even asked one of the fans, because you guys get a slew of fans calling in. They were there that night and loved it, right? One of the ones who calls in, Donnie says, hey, do you think it would be possible? Like, how successful do you think it would be if they both just, like, threw down their arms and found a venue and used both rosters and did a show, ECW and Core Losers NWA? And even the caller was like, I don't think it would land. He's like, there's just a lot of people, fandom of ECW, who are fully aware of what Coraluzzo's doing and his behaviors that they hate him. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of go, God.
And unfortunately, that turns the fans against each other, too.
Yes.
It's almost like, you know, on a much larger scale today, obviously, AEW fans, you know, they're the ones that are very vocal and very passionate, and they don't like any criticism towards AEW. And it's, you know, it's wrestling. Let everybody succeed.
Yeah, I mean,
why would you want someone to go out of business or trash, you know, their competitors? Competition is good.
Absolutely. I even understand the idea of being indifferent to a company, whether it succeeds or not, or whether it goes under, whatever. It's not like I'm aware of it or watch it or any of that stuff. Like, I get that, but also, like, rooting against it is not make sense, because as long as it is there on any level, it's helping the people you want to succeed somewhere.
It's not, right? It's not productive for the health of the business.
No. Yeah. But it's crazy. It's neat. Like, this is also like, yeah, Coraluzzo's doing his thing and rumors are going around about him all the time. And I mean, Coraluzzo had money, didn't he?
He was an insurance salesman.
Yeah.
This was a side thing for him, and he had the Monster Factory with Larry Sharp.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was a man of, you know, a wealthy man, let's put it that way.
Because I also, the other thing too, is that even like Brian said it then, he doesn't think that their success or failure is going to hurt or help either each other. So why would you work against each other? Because whether one goes under, you're not going to do better. And you know what I mean? And vice versa. So I don't think that their partnership would have made either one succeed either, but it definitely would have made for a lot more cool matches and fun storytelling.
But the slashing of the tires, the calling the fire department, you know, to check on the crowd. It was just petty bullshit.
It was ridiculous. Let's see. You do go into the ECW show with Donnie. You break down the entire show with the results. And I didn't keep the whole thing because it is kind of lengthy of this was this match and this happened here. Mm-hmm. But I did snip a part in the middle where you talk about Sandman and then you guys talk about Sabu's match.
Okay.
And then the big grudge match, Tommy Dreamer against Sandman. That was a brawl that took place throughout the ECW arena, and that one went everywhere.
You know, I got to tell you, as I've said to you earlier, I think the Sandman is a perfect example of creating, nurturing, and building your own talent, local talent that becomes a star. I thought Sandman, his interviews on television are incredible. His poise outside and inside the ring, and the heat that he generates with he and Dreamer yesterday, it goes back to what I was saying, that every match on there could be a main event. You know, we hear that cliche so many times, but I think with ECW, it's a perfect example where every match the fans are so involved in. And Sandman, I can't help it. I've watched him on tape. I've seen him in person. I saw him about a year or so ago, and I can't help but to be a fan of his because he has progressed.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt when you have someone the likes of Nancy Sullivan, also known as Woman, in your corner. So that was she looked great last night. She really did. It was exciting. Of course, I didn't really see the end of the match, but did Peaches, the estranged wife of Sandman, get involved in that also?
Yes, she did. You know, I was dodging when you're up at ringside taking pictures or even sitting in a first or second row. After a while, if you're not watching both sides constantly, you might get hit. I moved out of the way towards that, but she did. I saw her come to the ring with the caning stick and whatnot, so I know she did get involved.
Yes. Tasmaniac and Sabu taking on Joe and Dean Malenko.
Incredible.
Match of the night, in my opinion.
I'll tell you, the Malenkos are master craftsmen when it comes to, you know, we hear so much about Bret Hart, how much of a technician he is. I think he's as equal or at least equal with the Malenkos. And just seeing Taz and Sabu being brought to the ring, the lights and whatever it.
They had them both on a gurney. They were like chained
in.
911 brought them out on a gurney. The lights were all out, and they hit the ring, and the brawl was unbelievable. Sabu wearing a neck brace for the legitimate injury that he has suffered, and he was mentally preparing himself to get out to the ring before the show, and he really wanted to prove himself to the people there because the last two times he wasn't able to perform. The first time he had broken his ribs the night before against Cactus. And then, of course, the unfortunate neck injury from the last show, which was like 1 minute into the match. So he put on a performance last night, which I rank as the best performance I've ever seen him put on. The moonsaults, the fact that he, after Public Enemy, had interfered in the match at the end, just getting on top of, putting that chair on top of the third turnbuckle. And I don't even know how he kept his balance up there, and he did a damn moonsault off of it. It was incredible. It was certainly incredible.
He was amazing during his prime.
Wasn't he wrestling in a neck brace too, or did he come out?
He was.
Yeah. Insane. It's just insane.
Yeah, and in the back before, just watching him try to psych himself up and get prepared for what he was about to do out there. With a very sensitive situation with a neck injury that, you know, could have killed him, but he's back. He goes back out there and he puts on the performance to that point of his life that I had seen watching him.
The funny part too is that I've heard stories before about injuries happening and you performing anyways, and it's always like, oh, my shoulders hurt, so let's work the other side or whatever. You go to like, hey, just don't work my neck.
Yeah,
I'll just avoid the neck.
And he's going on the top rope with a chair and doing a moonsault.
I mean, yeah.
Suicidal, homicidal, genocidal. Paulie had his had that those descriptions of him to the T.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. But I knew that you guys were looking forward to it, especially with all the coverage we did of Sabu the last couple of weeks. I thought we should at least hear you guys. Yeah. Talking about Sabu. And obviously that's one of the guys that people mentioned on all the calls was and Sabu, you know, like it's crazy to think.
It's a golden age. Really, if you look back at it,
yeah.
29 years ago, it was a golden period for that federation.
I just wonder what do you think that he would have translated the same way if he were in WWF at that time? Because didn't his style...
I think they would have warded him down.
Yeah.
he might have been able to do more in WCW, but he wouldn't get away with that stuff in the W. At that time, it wasn't the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
It was right before it. But I think he could have been a game changer if they used him the right way, if he ever had that opportunity to work full time in the WWF back then.
Yeah. That's cool. I've thought about that in the past. Just Sabu's, you know, so legendary to the people who watched so regularly the ECW product.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if they needed each other in that sense. Like, would either one have been able to be what they were, you know, lore wise later, if either one didn't have each other to make that happen? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So pretty cool. You do talk a little bit about backstage Paul Heyman. I mean, it's cool to hear this, especially because we've seen Beyond the Mat.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
One thing also, just regarding the atmosphere backstage, they had a little bit of a pep talk, Paulie, and for all the guys, and Todd Gordon, and the atmosphere in the back, it's not like a typical wrestling dressing room where everyone's trying to stab each other in the back for the position in the company. It's everyone like a team player.
They all know their role, and that was the first time. I likened it to a football coach going out and doing that in a locker room before a game. It was the first time in 20-odd years that I've been involved with wrestling that I've seen that. And I think that sets a good precedence. Everybody feels that they're important. It's not like they're a doormat for the main event.
Yes, indeed. It was an exciting night, and the fans there, I really feel that one of the local press in Philadelphia, whether it's an evening magazine show or the Philadelphia Inquirer newspaper, someone, a reporter, or someone should go to that arena to do a feature on what's happening in that arena. It's unlike any wrestling crowd I've seen live.
They hand chairs, they hand crutches.
It's a little subculture of people.
Exactly. It's difficult to explain unless you're there to experience it. Now, I was there last June, and the atmosphere was rabid, but it was a lot different. You know, when I saw them having to close the doors, I said, a lot of promoters wish they had that problem.
Yep. That's very true. We're going to take a commercial break, and when we get back, we have lots more things to talk about in pro wrestling, so we'll be back after this.
Yeah, it was a very unique subculture. That was a good way to put it back then. It really was. The crowd, especially those people sitting up front, they were as much a part of the show sometimes as the performers in the ring were, and it only got more. They only got involved more as time went by.
Yeah. And, I mean, you called it then. People should be recording this stuff. Well, at one point, someone did. Mm-hmm. You know, the only insight we've really seen to any of that is that, like, that Beyond the Mat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was something that Paul did. I mean, and that Beyond the Mat, I believe that was their first pay-per-view. Donnie was there. I mean, he's in that scene where Paulie gave the pep talk.
Donnie's in there?
Donnie's there. You could see him in the footage. Yeah.
So dope.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was, it was like Paulie was the football coach. He was like, you know, just getting the troops, everybody circle around. And then Paulie goes up on the little stairway and then he just goes to town and fires everybody up.
Yep. This is the dance.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an amazing time.
That's cool. I wish I could see you backstage on Beyond the Mat. Every now and again, when I watch old stuff, I'm all like, I saw a Studio 54 documentary, and I kept looking for Paul.
Like, yeah, Paul right.
In the crowd?
Yeah, where
every time they showed a picture, I paused it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool to see yourself back then. I mean, when I watch some of those old Madison Square Garden tapes from 75, 76, and I see myself shooting at ringside as young as I was, and seeing myself with George Napolitano and just shooting pictures and being there, it's kind of like it brings you back.
Yeah.
Like, wow, I remember that vividly, like it was yesterday.
Yeah. So cool. It's my favorite part about this show. We get to go back and listen to stuff. As I said, I get warm feelings hearing your guys' friendship, and I wasn't there. So I can only imagine when you hear it back, you go, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. It really is. Just to cover it, and, you know, not to give another plug out, but that Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, where we review the December 10th show 50 years later when Bruno won the title, And Carrie Silkin joins us on that episode. It's out there for everybody. Was really, it brought me back to that magic night that Bruno won that title against Stasiak, and that we knew before the show started that Bruno was going to win. And it's really interesting to look back at it and to have the memory of those things. And then, of course, for this show, have the tapes that we can review each and every week. That's why when we talk about recycling again, it's something that I think we got to do.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Let's see. We do get into the callers. You were trying to say a few times you were trying to get a few people on the line, but you really just, you didn't get anybody else on the line. So every now and again, you come up from break and like, where's Sabu? Can we get Sabu? And it just never happens.
Yeah.
So for a huge chunk of the show, you're just taking calls. And a lot of them were at the show last night. So yeah, it's been pretty cool. So this is one person who I thought had a fun story, followed up by a kid who I just liked his attitude.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's hear it.
And we'll talk to Brett from Islip. Brett, you're first. And, of course, Brett was on the trip last night. Brett, are you there?
How you doing, John?
Good.
I just called to tell you that was the sickest show I ever saw in my life last night.
The sickest show?
I was in the front row. I got blood all over me. I had a guy next to me, him and Kevin Sullivan, a meat cleaver and stuff. It was incredible.
Nope. No dismemberment, though, right?
No, not really.
But
And now I'm hooked. I'm going to be on the next bus trip if I can fit on there. And I'm hooked for life now.
Was that the first ECW show you'd gone to?
Yeah, the first one live. I've been watching all the tapes, though.
Uh-huh.
But the tapes don't even compare.
Well, how do you describe the crowd atmosphere compared to the other shows that you've been?
Oh, incredible. Those guys up in the bleachers there were incredible.
The bleacher bums?
Yeah.
No,
they're coming for everybody.
Yeah, they certainly were gunning for me. I went there to distribute a few posters, and they started making some chants about me. It was I said, I went back to the dressing room, and I said, they show no mercy to anyone, do they?
You talk about sick crowds. One fellow on the bus, as we were talking about earlier, he took back the chair that was used during the match, and there was blood on it, and they literally took the chair home.
Mm-hmm. What a souvenir.
My friend next to me got blood all over his pants and everything. So
next time, I guess, everyone in the front row, they should hand out, like, plastic.
Like a Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, you should wear a raincoat when you go there.
Yeah, it was amazing.
But we appreciate you coming on a trip.
Thanks a lot for having it.
And hopefully we'll see you December 17th.
I hope so.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Brett.
Okay, take care.
955-1240 is the number to call here at the program. We'll go to Long Beach and speak to Dan. Dan, you're next. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, Dan, you're next. Okay. Yeah, well, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes. What can we do for you?
I found out the guys that won the Survivor Series, the first one for you.
Okay.
They're Davey Boy, Jim Neidhart, Bret Hart, King Kong Bundy, and Bam Bam Bigelow.
No, that's great. Bigelow, I appreciate that.
That's a surprise for me.
Will you be watching it this Wednesday?
Yeah, I will.
What are your feelings on Backlund turning? What do you think of it? You think Backlund's going to come out of it with the strap?
Well, I guess so, but I'm rooting for the Hitman.
Okay. Anything else?
I need to know the real names of the Road Warriors and Papa Shango.
Okay, Papa Shango is let me check my book here, but I think it's Charles Harris, if I'm not mistaken. Mike
lives in Las Vegas.
Right. Mike Hextrand is Road Warrior Hawk, and Joe, how do you pronounce his last name?
I can't pronounce his last name.
It starts Lagerentes? Something like that? Papa Shango is Charles Wright, by the way.
Okay.
And Road Warrior Hawk is Mike Hextrand, and Road Warrior Animal is Joe.
Vince with an L-A-U-R-N-A, something, I cannot pronounce
Laurentes or something like that.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thank you.
Thanks for your call. 955-1240 is the number to call.
Laurinaitis.
Laurinaitis. I love that. You guys are going back forever trying to figure out how to say Laurinaitis.
Well, we only know that name now just because of Johnny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun. That was a good call.
I liked him. He goes, yeah, and I need to know their names.
Yeah, right now.
Yeah.
Or else I'll start chanting what the fans at ECW started chanting at you.
Yeah.
Which was, you fat fuck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least the guy didn't, at the comedy show, didn't go that route. At least he strictly went for your communist background.
No, he didn't go that route, but it was, you know. So he's like, I don't even want to get into it, but
that's fine.
It was funny. It was all in good fun. No. I had a blast.
I'm sure as soon as he pointed at you, you're all like,
All right, here we go again. I'm the butt of another series of jokes. Let's do it. Buckle up.
Hey, listen, I was just there just to enjoy it. And my sister pre-warned me, and she knew the guy really well. She says, just be prepared. I was like, I am. I'm cool. Don't worry about it.
Let's see. A lot of calls. Paul from Philly, greatest show ever. Oh, I like that comment, too, that Donna made, that fans were taking home stuff because it had blood on it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we want that. And it was great. And the one guy's like, this was amazing. I got blood all over myself. I loved it. You're like, that's so weird.
And he was talking about a meat cleaver.
Yeah. Yeah. So funny. Let's see. All right. So we got a couple more callers. This one is, because there's just a bunch of stuff in there about, one person calls in to find out what somebody, I don't know where he read it, but Miss Elizabeth had a non-compete clause and he didn't know what that was. So it's the first time you guys really break down the non-compete and how that works, which I thought was kind of neat. Mm-hmm. Dominic from Queens calls in to give the results of a Tommy D show at Our Lady of Guadalupe. And my favorite part was that he started it with, it was just like an ECW show. You're like,
Tommy D's show, Universal Wrestling Superstars. I doubt it.
Yeah. He said it was just like an ECW show. You got to check it out. And they're like, okay. And then he also asked you, did you ask Ron Sculler about those photos? So apparently he was trying to buy photos off of Ron, I think. So you said he's working. He'll see what he can do is what he said. So, oh, and before we get to the next clip, someone asked what was going on with Ric Flair. You talk about how he's working backstage, and the rumor is he's going to work and team with Hogan next year. And the guy says that's, you know, an awful spot for Flair to have to team with Hogan. And you said, but the money he got paid for the Hogan match, he is set for life. Hmm. I think he files for bankruptcy 4 times after this. So.
No kidding. Really?
Something like that. He's constantly running out of money, but.
Well, that's what he does every night. He takes his payday and he just spends it at the bar.
I just loved it. Set for life. And I was like, 94? He'd find a way not to be. Mm-hmm. Could have.
Yeah. He may be set for life now.
Yes. Yeah. But here's 3 phone calls back to back, which I just got a kick out of.
1240 is the number to call here at the program. And we'll be taking your calls here at Pro Wrestling Spotlight for the next 50 minutes or so, and we're going to try to get Sabu on the line as well, because that would certainly be interesting, and we hope to have him on before the end of the show. Let's go to Rod from Medford. Rod, you're next. Hello.
Hi, John. This is Rob from Medford.
How's it going? Rob. How you doing?
Good. I was at the show last night, and I was in the third row, and there's no words to describe it anymore. You just have to be there to see it. 2 things about the show. I thought it was pretty funny watching Donnie Leibel. Like, he was like running for his life the whole show.
You know, twice I almost got nailed. Once I did get hit by Shane Douglas and I got out of the way.
During that door collar match, you looked like you just didn't want to be out there.
Well, you know, there was puddles of blood on the floor. And when you kneel down, a lot of times if you're trying to watch both ways, who's coming at you, and then you see these puddles of blood, a little difficult at times.
And the other thing about ECW, where in America can you go home with sensational Sherry Shoe as I did last night?
Did you catch the shoe?
Yes, I did. It bounced off my friend, and it was laying right in front of me. Picked it up, and I went home with a souvenir.
That's a nice souvenir, I tell you.
Unbelievable. It's just incredible.
She hurt her ankle when Shane threw her into the ropes. She had heels on, and she couldn't run into the ropes, and she twisted her ankle, and they were attending to her after
she
the show.
She takes some of the most incredible bumps I've ever seen. She really does.
She earns her pay, yeah.
And one thing about the Survivor Series, the Backlund Hitman thing, I don't know, between you and Donnie, the hype for this match, I'm looking forward to this more than I was for the Flair Hogan match. I don't know how you guys feel, but just what Backlund's been doing.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Can't wait to see this.
And I like to say, you know, some people like to say the 70s, quote unquote, style, this and that. Well, it's taking a guy from the 70s to get your interest back again, and this old generation versus new generation. I'm quite proud to see Backlund back there in a top position, and probably will be getting the belt, and goes to show the old generation isn't so bad after all.
This is true. Thanks a lot for your time, guys.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Good one.
This was the guy who got to take home the Sherry Martel shoe, which I thought was funny, and hearing Dawn, mm-hmm. like you said, almost childlike, oh, you got the shoe! I remember that spot.
And describing, you know, what he had to go through. running around the ringside avoiding people and not wanting to kneel down because there were puddles of blood everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then did they have – was Jared on that line or did I cut that where he wants to see if his friend can get in to wrestling?
No, we didn't hear that.
Yeah, so I thought I had added that, but as I'm reading the notes and realized that I didn't hear that, a guy calls in after that who one of his friends called in earlier, and he goes, my friend wants to get into wrestling. He's always hitting himself with stuff at school and hitting himself with chairs and making himself bleed, and you and Donnie start laughing. You're like, well, that might be all he needs to know how to do. So,
mm-hmm. Hey, I used to freak people out in college, and because I used to be really good at being able to slam my head into a wall. Make it look real.
Yes. I used to do that too in like high school and stuff. I would put my foot out and kick doors as people opened it.
Yeah.
Threw my head back.
Yeah.
And kept, I constantly made people think they were hitting me with doors. You just, when you're a wrestling fan as a kid, you start.
Yeah. Goofing. People look at you like, what the hell is wrong with this guy?
Yep. But you get another couple callers about venues, about an ECW. This next batch of them is really cool because one of the things that a caller asked before is what you thought about Sherry Martel in the Shane Douglas spot. And because he said that, you know, back when Hogan did a Sherry spot, a lot of people were like, hey, there's really no place for this. You shouldn't be having a man hit a woman like this. But people kind of like brushed over it a little bit. And then this one, people were kind of celebrating it. So this caller called in to kind of like call you on it. Like, hey, are you guys saying this is cool? You said more or less that like, you personally still felt like there really didn't need to do that. That seeing a man hit a woman isn't to you entertaining in a sense that needs to be on the product. So this one opens up with Donnie coming right out of the break. He told you how he felt about it and you actually wanted him to say it on air. So he does go into his opinion on it. What makes mm-hmm. Sherry special and different in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get two callers back to back after that.
Now back to the Pro Wrestling Spotlight with your host, John Arezzi.
All righty, we're back for the remainder. And Don, you brought up a good point during the commercial break regarding Sensational Sherry.
This is my own opinion. I have no problem with Sherry getting slammed by Shane Douglas. I have no problem with her getting knocked around on the cage by Hulk Hogan. Why? I don't look at Sherry as a woman when she's out at the ring. I look at her as a wrestler, and I don't say female wrestler or male wrestler. That's her job to be out there. She knows what she's doing. She just happens to be doing it with four other men there. Could be three women or one man, however the combination is. She's a professional. Yes, she is a woman, but she's a wrestler. And that's what a wrestler does. They get involved physically and get thrown around. And if she didn't want to be there, she wouldn't be there. She's not the manager type like Elizabeth was, who didn't get slammed around or whatever. Sherry's a wrestler first, then she became a manager, and I personally don't have any problem with that.
And our engineer Mark says she looks like a man in the first place. She's looking pretty good recently. She looked good last night, I'll tell you that. Looked very relaxed and certainly dressed elegantly last night in the back. She certainly a beautiful lady as well, personally. Very nice lady. We're going to go to Seaford and take our next caller at 955-1240 at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Mark from Seaford, you're on. Hello, Mark. You're next.
Okay.
You're on the internet right now.
All right. Oh, hi, John.
Hi, Mark.
It's a long time no talk to.
Is this like Mark from like back in the original 1989 days?
Yep, the original 1989 days.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Hanging in there. Question, maybe something that you and Don would like to look into. I heard that Vince McMahon signed a deal with Fox 5 to have a Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh, really? Well, that's something to check into.
It's supposed to be a tag team steel cage match pitting Lex Luger and Bret Hart against The Undertaker and an unknown opponent.
Maybe Ultimate Warrior.
Possible. And you were talking about the Warrior returning at SummerSlam.
That's a fire series.
I also heard that Jake the Snake Roberts may be returning as well.
Well, these are all rumors that we could try to verify, but Jake the Snake is another guy that I could see him going back to WWE.
Yeah, and for the very reason, I believe that Jake, his bargaining power probably isn't there anymore, that
no.
He's more or less looking for work, and he still has the name with them, but I think they would be the ones that have him over the barrel now, so to speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jake the Snake's certainly a big name, but like I said, he's burned a lot of bridges in this business and many, many promotions throughout throughout the world. And he had his most success in the WWF, and he was a strong merchandising character for the kids. So I could see Vince taking him back.
Mm-hmm. All right, John. Thanks a lot.
Mark, good talking to you. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Haven't heard from Mark in a few years here at the program. We'll go back to the phones and go to Vito from Brooklyn. Vito, you're next. Hi, Vito, you're on the air. We should have let that play out. That's becoming my favorite song. Once a week.
Knows Zippo about wrestling, but knows a lot about being a jerk.
Can you name that tune? I can't name that tune. Do you know what it is? Do you know what it is?
It's called I Am a Moron.
No, Mark seems to know he can name that tune.
It's from Bugs Bunny. That thing with the Little Red Riding Hood? The one? Yeah.
Where, is it really?
Yes. Okay. I have no life either.
I hear it every week.
I have no life either.
Oh, boy.
We were waiting for that answer for a long time.
Forever. Ever.
Little Red Riding Hood angle on Bugs Bunny cartoon.
I found it. I found it. And it's absolutely the beginning of it.
Really?
Yeah. I watched it. It's 4 minutes long. And I don't know if it's a wrestling term or not. But there is a moment where I know it's used in wrestling, which is what I'm saying. I don't know where it came from. There's a moment where the wolf goes to a bed and there's a bunch of his family in there. Mm-hmm. And he says, take a powder. And so they all run out of the bed.
Well, that caller was creative then. A little wrestling tying into it.
I think so.
That was the longest that we heard that also.
It was. And it was so long that I went to, as I was doing it, I was like, oh, shoot. And I start pausing stuff and I'm going and I'm listening to it play through and I'm trying to like get that clip out so I can start seeing if I could Spotify it or something. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he goes, oh, I know where it's from. I was like, wait, what? Huh? And it's the beginning of a Little Red Riding Hood Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Mystery solved.
Yeah, we did it. I couldn't believe it. I was so excited because of every week we've been talking about it. We should play it longer. Like I should have played it longer, and then in this very one I should have let it play.
That is cool.
Here it is, John. Here's the answer.
All right. Look at that.
Yep. And then she's going through the mountains and stuff. And then the wolf breaks in and right here.
Come on. Take a powder. This is my racket.
Wow.
It's the only wrestling reference I could find in it. But
hey, it's reason enough to go to the YouTube and watch that on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. You'll be able to see what Marsh and I got so excited about. What a highlight of 2024 so far.
Oh, my God. It was vindicating to hear Mark back then say he had it. I was so excited when I was pulling that clip. It was ridiculous. Yeah. It was like I had no business being that excited to hear that answer.
I don't even know how the hell you found it. That's crazy.
So amazing. Maybe one day we'll do a full watch along of the four. Yeah, right, well,
how the hell did you find it? I mean, when he said Bugs Bunny, all you did was put Bugs Bunny Red Riding Hood in a search and it came up.
Yeah, there was a couple things, but yeah, I was digging around for anything that looked like Little Red Riding Hood having to do with Bugs Bunny. Yeah. And then when I pushed that one just to see, I was like, what about this one? It opened with it. That was the opening.
I would have loved to have seen the expression on your face when you discovered it.
It was like when Kurt Angle won his first championship. Yeah. It was so cool. So first show of the year, we're winning. We're already winning.
We're already in there in the winner's circle.
Yep. One guy calls in Marshall from Old Bridge. Oh, I was going to say about the halftime show. Vince eventually did that. He was getting halftime show stuff. Remember Halftime Heat? It was a couple times they did that.
It didn't happen in that Super Bowl, though.
No, it didn't happen in that Super Bowl and not under the way that they had speculated was happening.
Yeah.
But it's probably because it didn't work out that Vince said,
F them. We'll figure out a way to do a halftime show.
Yeah. And he did.
And he did. Marshall from Old Bridge called in. He was asking about Manny Fernandez booking a show in New Jersey. And the whole thing was almost contentious about him being like, I need more information about that group. And you're like, oh, well, these guys and stuff. And he goes, all right, well, how do I get a hold of them? And I was like, what? And then you're all like, Dominic might have more information. He's like, okay, so give me Dominic's number. I need to find out more about it. Like, what's going on? Like, this guy's trying to find Manny Fernandez. Like,
maybe he had ulterior motives.
It didn't feel safe.
It did not.
This is the final clip I have, though. It's a call from Steve who talks about AAA. Donnie tells a pretty cool story, and then it's kind of a little bit of the outro, which I just thought was kind of nice.
Nice way to end it.
And we will go to Long Beach and speak to Steve. Steve, you're next.
Okay, good.
Steve, hello? Yes, you're on.
Okay, good. Gentlemen, I want to bring up something that you talked about last week, John, regarding the use of the Spanish television stations. And I would like to say that any of these up-and-coming organizations, ECW, AAA, any of the other ones, should, for my money, go exclusively right now until they can get an English network, go with a Spanish network. And the reason I say this is because I'm a devout soccer fan, and soccer has kept its interest up from the days of the Cosmos to the last summer's World Cup because of the Spanish language telecasts on Channel 41 and 47 and the Italian telecasts on Sunday mornings on Channel 31. And I'll tell you, and I'm sure you and Don remember Miguel Alonso, who did the old Lucha Libre shows on...
Miguel Alonso, yeah. And Miguel Yaney.
And Luis Magana, his color man.
Luis Magana, yeah, that's right.
And I tell you, they were as entertaining and as enjoyable as any announcer you'd ever want to hear. Any of the English guys, they're better than just about anybody that's around now.
Well, also, the WWF used to be on Friday nights there. They were on Saturdays on Channel 47. And, of course, as you said, 41 was on Wednesday. So right. I agree that that's a lot of people get those stations.
Miguel Alonso, especially when when there was a submission hold.
Oh, he was beautiful.
What do you say? Do you give up?
When the guy counted for Tres Palmares, he used to scream.
Do you know, a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago, I was coming home on a plane from Florida, and as I was switching in Baltimore, it was the day before the WWF television tapings in Utica, New York, and just so happened, the crew from the WWF, the production crew, were getting on my plane. And it was a small plane, and who was well along with him was Miguel.
Ah!
And I this is incredible. He sat right next to me, and I just come back from Florida from seeing Al Costello, one of the Kangaroos, and I had a lot of wrestling memorabilia with me, and I had an old L.A. program, and I sat next to Miguel, and he couldn't believe when I asked him, tried talking to him, he couldn't believe that somebody knew who he was. He was, you know, a little confused. And I said, yeah, Channel 41. And I'm trying to mimic the music and everything.
Oh, I love that music.
Well, when we got off the plane and I asked him for his autograph, these people were all crowding around us wondering, who is it? And I of course, I couldn't explain because they wouldn't realize or understand who it was. But he felt so shocked that somebody actually knew who he was. But remember, in between the tag matches, in between the rounds they had, they would have that music playing.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? And that infamous bell sounding at the Olympic.
Oh, I went there a couple of times. I've got a picture of that telephone number. I still remember Richmond
95171.
tell me this. You know, we all say how wonderful I'm sure he has been. Howard Finkel's a great announcer.
Right.
There's been some, but nobody in my
book. Yeah, I'm talking about play-by-play. Fink never did play-by-play.
Right, no, but what I'm going to say is nobody could hold a candle to Jimmy Lennon when it comes to ring announcers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody. That guy's voice and the
he was an uncle of the Lennon sisters.
Yes. Incredible. His son is a ring announcer, does boxing, and sounds just like him. Incredible.
The one other thing I wanted to mention, why I say they could go with a Spanish network, again with soccer. I'm sure you and everybody were aware of the publicity that Andres Cantor, who did all the games on the Univision television network, got. He outraged and upstaged all the English guys. And Tony Tirado, who did them before him for the old Spanish International Network, it was the same thing. So they really could go for this time being for a start with the Spanish announcers and just get the product on the air. The big problem I see, and I was on television in 1985 here on Channel 2 with Eddie Mansfield, who wrestled out there, and I saw him a few times, is to get into when they can build up a following and build up a good attendance base to fight their way into the garden, because Vince has a lock on all three arenas, and that's going to be the biggest problem for these up-and-coming federations to get in there, to force their way in and get the people who operate these three arenas to allow allow them in there and not worry about whether Vince is going to pout and go off and say I'm taking my product somewhere else.
Well, the bottom line is the dollars that could be generated. And if, let's say, AAA comes back to the Paramount and sells that out, their next step is the big building. And because of the relationships that Ron Scola's partners, who also manage the band Salt and Pepper, have, they have relationships with these buildings. So that's one group that's one group that could possibly get in. But anyway, we got to run. We appreciate your call and your insights.
Okay, good talking to you, John.
Good talking to you.
Bye.
Okay, take care. And that was an interesting last caller for today, Don. And tell you, lots of things going on in the business. And I want to thank you for coming down here live in the studio today.
Oh, it's just
and accompanying
happening.
Us on the bus trip yesterday, which was a lot of fun. A
lot of fun. And I just like to say to the people, to the caller who, you know, who stayed on the line for so long to get his digs in, which didn't get over the air, save the time for people that really care about wrestling and not, you know, being juvenile and ignorant and all those kind of things, because it should be a lot of fun. And when it's not fun, you shouldn't be in it. And wrestling certainly has so many it's like food, John. Everybody has so many different tastes to try, and that's what wrestling should be.
Yes, indeed. And I also want to wish my dad a happy birthday today. And we'll be seeing you in just a little bit. Have a nice birthday dinner. And Don, you're, of course, coming to the birthday bash for my dad.
Wow. Nice. My dad loved Donnie.
Yeah?
Yeah. Donnie's to visit. My dad had an apartment near Cypress Hills. And when I first met Don would come over, you know, because he knew I was coming in, he'd hang out with my dad and my grandma and me, and my dad really liked Donnie, and Donnie loved my dad as well. So that was really cool to hear, especially that this broadcast that we're covering was on his birthday back then. And I do remember, I think we went to the Trot Inn, which was a little restaurant for his birthday in North Babylon, New York. Yeah, that was kind of cool. Good way to end it.
Yeah, when I heard that too, I was all like, what a perfect weekend for you this must have been.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Donnie's coming to town. We're going to go to the meet and greet at Corluzzo's. We're going to go see the CCW show. Mm-hmm. We're going to go have dinner with my dad. Like, this is a packed, amazing weekend.
Yeah, and then all these years later, we find out the truth about that theme from Red Riding Hood and Bugs Bunny. I mean, what a way to wrap it all up in a nice little tidy bow.
Perfect.
But next week, Marsh, next week, and I uploaded that show today. It's in the Google Drive. We'll put it out for our patrons Sunday. We cover the death of Art Barr. That's what leads it off. Art was found dead in his car. And so we bring Ron Scholar on to talk about that. And then Public Enemy is in the studio for the show. And it's hilarious. You know, it's, you know, not just them being in character and their digs and their little, you know, playing off of each other. You know, obviously it started off sad, but it segued right into when Public Enemy showed up, which was about a half hour into the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was an amazing segment with them. And I hadn't heard it in so long because I remember it as like these guys are in character and they should have been out of character and not as kayfabe as they were. But listening back to it now, it was refreshing to hear these two guys that were like the hottest tag team at that time in the studio talking about everything and just making jokes and having fun with the callers. And we also have Evan Ginsberg from the Wrestling Then and Now newsletter back then. And Evan is a historian, has been still around, actually. Mm-hmm. And he calls in to discuss Art Barr, who they just had on his – he was on a college station. They did an overnight show. And so it really was a very jam-packed show, which is going to be show number 258 from November 27th, 1994, that we're going to – review next week.
That sounds cool. If you had to shotgun an answer, who do you think was easier to deal with in studio, Power Twins or Public Enemy?
Oh, Public Enemy was just because they're natural, they're funny, they're not forced funny, they're not bullies. And they're not morons.
I'm sure that would make the Power Twins very happy to hear.
I don't think so. I mean, just watching, just putting up on their Facebook, I mean, they just went hunting again, and they had dozens of pictures of them with slaughtered animals all around them. You know, one picture was like one of them holding a, you know, with a knife and a hog. So, yeah. So, though, I mean, what the hell?
You've always been surrounded by characters.
Yeah, always. Still am in so many ways. But this was a really good one. I like, you know, coming into the new year and starting off the new year with this. And it was informative. Donnie was there. We talked ECW. We had some good callers. It was a good jam-packed episode, Marsh. So thank you for all that work, man.
Yeah. As soon as that guy said Vito from Brooklyn, I said, this one's going to be it.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen here. There is no Vito from Brooklyn. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm happy. This kind of makes me even like more energized and look forward to what's coming up next. I know we're running towards the end here. But
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 after today's show. 6 left.
Yep. And then we'll regroup and perhaps repackage and then go again.
Yep. I mean, April of this year is going to be 35 years that the show debuted at WNYG. 35 years.
That's fantastic. That's awesome.
And we're going to have some fun with it, you know.
Yeah. It's going to be a good year.
It will be. Because I don't know how many I got left.
Yeah. Man, none of us know.
No, none of us know. And 2024 is certainly going to be the most volatile year in the history of this country, probably.
Oh, yeah. We got a lot of...
We got a lot to look forward to, don't we?
A lot to dread for. So, awesome. I'm excited, John. Let's do this.
And everything going else well for you on your podcast? What's going on? Give us a little update on what's shaking in Marsh's world right now.
And where Wrestling on the Rocks. We've been coming back pretty strong on the audio side of things and been having a lot of fun doing that. We record twice a week, but we chop it up and drop a little nugget every day, which has been a lot of fun to kind of get back into, you know, hanging out with my friends. One of my original guys who was one of the reasons we even started one has left the show for a few years, and he's back. He's back. He's re-energized. He's loving the product more than he has in a long time, which is why he kind of stepped away. Sort of like you know, for a while, it's like, this feels negative and I don't want to be negative. So let me just take a break, you know?
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun because we've been able to goof off again. So,
well, that's what makes it really cool. You know, when you're having fun doing it, like we have fun every week doing this, and for you to have Wrestling on the Rocks be re-energized and you guys are all having fun with it. I mean, you got it. Everybody out there, check it out, will you?
Yeah, it's fun. Come have a drink with us. We're your drinking buddies. But that's what we're up to, man.
Yeah. Well, very, very cool. All right, Marsh, listen, I want to thank you again, and it's going to be a good year, and you have some exciting things happening in your life this year, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the year we should be done by March with our current run. So maybe we'll get back together after the wedding.
Yeah. Yeah. What I'm thinking of doing is, like, once this is over, like, we have 6 weeks, 6 shows left, which will take us probably in the middle of February. Right.
Yeah.
Then you have a big event. I don't know if you want to tell everybody about it or not. That's up to you. So once that's over with, maybe we kind of relaunch everything in April.
Yeah.
Which makes it 35 years.
I think that'd be perfect.
And then we start the cycle, and we have some hilarity and some fun, and people who have not had a chance to hear George from Lindenhurst will finally get the opportunity to do so.
It's going to be great. I think it's going to be good stuff. Looking all forward to it. And, you know, happy new year to all the listeners and Patreons and the YouTube watchers and all of them.
All of them. Keep telling your friends about it. Share it. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple, and just kind of spread the word about us. You want us to stick around longer? Join the Patreon community, patreon.com/John Arezzi. and become part of this community with us and help it grow. Maybe we can grow this thing this year.
It's been cool and it's been fun seeing the guys who come on and doing the Zoom calls and getting to know some of those guys.
Yes.
It's a really cool little community. I'm kind of a part of a few of them. And these guys are people I don't get to see in any of the other ones that are really cool. Like they're really interesting people. So,
and Anthony is very, he's a unique individual, Anthony Pyrus.
Oh yeah.
He actually, before we wrap, he texted me over the holidays, I guess, cause he was listening to the original broadcast that we just reviewed here. And this is what he just out of the blue. It was Wednesday. And he goes, "I so wish I lived in your area back then. I would have been the biggest bus trip guy." And I responded, "And you would have been the life of the party." He goes, "I actually find myself jealous of the people who went on that ECW, those ECW shows on the bus." And he goes, "I also find it sad that the original run is ending. It's been an adventure from day one." So we'll have even more adventures, as we will with everybody else. All right, Marsh, thank you so much. Let me wrap this bad boy up. And that will wrap up this edition of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Six shows to go, and then we will recycle. So join our communities wherever you may find them, Instagram, Twitter, Threads. That's all at John Arezzi, the YouTube channel, which is so important. And if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, please do so. It just takes a quick minute. We got lots of content up there. YouTube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Also, Patreon, once again, $5 a month gets you in the door of the levels to choose from. And I am, as I told you before the break of the first of the year, I'm looking to perhaps sell some of my archives on our Patreon page, because you're allowed to sell stuff on there now. So we'll see if we could figure that out, because I'm going to be diverting myself of a lot of this stuff over this year. And if you're a fan of history, keep tuned. Don't forget to check out the sister podcast. Probably one of the best episodes ever. A lot of great response on that one. Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden covers all the shows I was at the Mecca Bowl Arenas 50 years ago. And that new show is up, reviewing that 50th anniversary of Bruno winning the WWWF title from Stan Stasiak December 10th, 1973. Carrie Silkin is on that show with us as well. And that is co-hosted by Tim Poutre, written and researched by my dear friend Richie Garcia. I want to thank our producer and creative director, Marsh. And I want to thank all of the patrons, our executive producers, Anthony Pyrus and Joe Holloway, who will be joining us sometime here in January for a appearance. And all the patrons, each and every one of you, for your support, helping with the production costs for this show. Until next week, when we relive more history with you, this is John Arezzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.